It's my privilege to welcome you to our Career Connections workshop. I don't know how many of you have actually come to this workshop before. All right, one, two. It is an excellent workshop. These guys are consummate professionals. It's great. So we're glad that you're here. The reason that we do this, and the reason that we're glad for the opportunity to be able to host this and provide this, is because we believe that work is a blessing from God, and that it can be very difficult if you're out of work and you're looking for a job. And so we want to be a help to people, obviously. But as I was thinking about how I would introduce this idea of why is it that we do what we do for this seminar, this workshop, in my class that I teach here at the church, we had recently studied the book of Ecclesiastes. And in it, there's a verse in chapter 2, verses 23 and 24. It says, "For all his days are full of sorrow, and his work is a vexation." And he's just talking about general population for everybody. "And his work is a vexation. Even in the night, his heart does not rest. This also is vanity. There is nothing better for a person than he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. This also, I saw, is from the hand of God." Now, there's a lot of context that goes into that, but essentially what he's saying is that work can be nothing but frustration. And that's not hard to see. Most of us understand that work is often a vexation. But when you don't have it, it would be nice to at least have the opportunity to choose if your job is a vexation or not. But at the very least, we know that work can be hard, difficult. But then it also says there's nothing better than for someone to have work and find enjoyment in it, to find enjoyment in his toil. So, and as you read the book of Ecclesiastes, what comes out is the idea that work is not really the answer. Work is not what's going to bring the satisfaction that all of us, all humanity, really longs for. But it is good. From Genesis throughout, it's good to have work to do. That's how God created us. He created us to be able to do work. But just to know that work is not the ultimate answer to life. As if I could just get a job, then everything else would be fine. No, it won't. It won't be fine. But the secret here is that it says, "This also I saw is from the hand of God." To be able to enjoy work is something that God gives. And that's actually repeated in other verses. To be able to enjoy life, to enjoy your family, to enjoy, it says, to talk about enjoying your spouse. All those things are from God. So, one, work is not the answer. Two, contentment is really found in God. And that's one of the things that we want you to remember as we talk about all these things and finding a job, is that contentment is truly found in God. And we can find contentment if we are unemployed or employed in God. That doesn't mean that there won't be certain difficulties when you're working, or that there won't be any difficulties while you're unemployed. Yeah, there will be. But to know that our contentment comes from God is the place to start. And then three, to recognize that God is the provider of everything. Every dollar that passes through my hand passes through God's first. And he's the one that gives us the money, the abilities, the connections, the opportunities. He gives us the work that we have. And so to live our lives for him, unto him, letting him give us what he deems good, pleasing, and perfect as part of his will, is how we can find that contentment. And so to have that as a backdrop, a perspective, a lens through which we interact with all these concepts that we're going to be talking about today, we think is going to be helpful. And that's one of the reasons why we think it's worthwhile to put this on. Those principles are important, but also these principles that they're going to be talking about today, I will just show you just the outline, getting ready, assessing yourself, who are you as a person, putting some things together. Then the next part of our workshop today will be getting the interview. How do you really do that? That might seem like the secret, if I could just get the interview. But actually, the third part is what you really want, getting the job. And so that's just a breakdown of the time, and there'll be breaks in between. And just to let you know, Ken Vaughn and Kim Lindsay and Marty Guastella they really do know their stuff. And if you have questions, please ask them. These aren't just people who studied up on this topic because we needed somebody to stand up here and deliver these principles. No, they really know them. So before I go any further, we're going to do some introduction and things like that, and they're going to come up in a second. But before I bring them up, let me just pray for our time. Heavenly Father, thank you that we can come to you as our Heavenly Father. You transcend all things. You are in control of all things, and you are sovereign over each of our lives, each moment of our life. But you're also our Father. You love us. You care for us. We can come to you with our concerns, and you listen, and you respond to our prayers. And so we ask that you would guide our time, that this would be a beneficial time. It would be an encouraging time, that you would speak through Ken and Kim and Marty, and that you would be involved in all the conversations that happen around the table, so that we would be encouraged to find our contentment in you, that we would be encouraged to be diligent in our pursuit of work, and that you would actually give us that benefit of learning some things that will help us in this process of finding a job. And Lord, thank you that you care enough to walk with us through the trials of life. And so we ask all this in your name, and we thank you for all that's going to happen. And it's in Jesus' name that we pray. Amen. Ken Vaughn, we can welcome him up. Thanks, Ken.
All of you got the sheets when you walked in, and hopefully you filled them out by now. And so what we want to do is pass them around at the table, just stand around where you have two people, you just trade them, obviously, and where you have three people, pass them around the table, three, four people. We're going to have you introduce each other. It's important for any time you go to an event like this to know who are the people in the room, who can I help in their job search process. And it's important for us as presenters to know what the audience we're talking to is. So I see some of you are furiously completing it now. So, but let's pass it around, and I'll give you just another minute to do that. Maybe while you're doing that, I'll introduce myself. My name's Ken Vaughn. I've been involved in Parkside Church for over 30 years now. Hard to believe. My background is engineering and the MBA. Came to Cleveland area with TRW and worked there 11 years, another 10 years at a smaller company. Got laid off and looked for a job through the same process some of you are going through. And in that process of doing that, God basically gave me a consulting business. And what I do now is consulting with industrial companies about where and how to compete, so business strategy kind of stuff. So Dan mentioned that the agenda for today is getting ready, getting the interview, and getting the job. And the portion that I'm going to talk about is getting ready, and that's preparing and organizing a job search. And I'm going to break my getting ready down into four parts: getting focused, getting organized, getting aware, and getting started. So let's get focused. And for those of you who are in the unemployed state, or perhaps you're looking for something because you might be a little disappointed or disgruntled where you're at, the most important thing as you're getting ready to start a job search really is to deal with all of that disappointment or anger and get that behind you. It's tough to be successful in a job search and a job interview if your attitude comes through as disappointed, angry, disgruntled, because people don't want to really have an employee who has that kind of a problem. And one of the verses that I like to think about when we talk about this anger and disappointment is James, the first chapter 2 and the second verse. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of any kind, many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete and not lacking anything. So really, whatever you're going through is an opportunity to learn and grow and to trust God more. We're supposed to count it all joy, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. So I would encourage you to, if you are unemployed, it is a loss. Jobs are important for both financial gain and for psychic benefit, but if we're unemployed and we want to move on to the next step, we need to put that behind us. Understand what it is that led to that and put a positive spin on it. And then be ready to go into the next phase with a positive attitude. It used to be, and probably today it isn't even that case anymore, but it used to be if you were unemployed, laid off, or whatever, there was a stigma to that. I think that's probably pretty much gone these days, but if any of you are feeling that, everybody in the world goes through this process. So it seems that way anyways. It's the days of our fathers and grandfathers when people would come out of college or high school, get a job, work 30 years, get their gold watch and retire. Those days are gone. And because the world changes so rapidly, technology changes, business conditions change, economic conditions change, companies come and go, their employment opportunities or needs change over time. There just really isn't any loyalty or any long-term expectations anymore in the world, in the work field. And in terms of careers, the trend is moving away from employment to projects. So companies will hire people to do, I need somebody who's going to do this for the next 2 years, and then they're going to move on and do something else, and then I'm going to need somebody else to do something else 2 years from now. So the whole idea of getting a job that you're going to be at for years and years, let's just say we're going to get used to the idea of looking for jobs a lot. Basically, as a consultant, I look for a job every day. What's my next project going to be? Who do I need to meet? Where are the next opportunities? What's going on in the world? Where am I going to find the next thing to do? So visualize your next job, and when you're in the job search process, it's not something you do between 8 and 9 in the morning and then go play golf. It's a full-time job. And so you get to work and get started on the job search process. But there's probably some time for golf, because you don't want to be holed up in your room 16 hours a day. I got to find a job. You want to have some relaxation. You want to be healthy physically, emotionally, spiritually. So you need to do some things to keep yourself fit and relaxed and positive. And we always recommend develop a support network. Who are the people that are going to be encouragers for you, who are going to be praying with you, and offering you support? Find that support network, and it's a great opportunity to spend a little time each day in prayer and studying the Word to learn and grow. So the next part I want to talk about is really the getting organized. And if you're doing this, I know somebody mentioned they have a job coach and they probably have a place where they can go, a little cubicle, and they have a workspace and so forth. But most of us who are doing a job search, we're doing it from our dining room table or a corner in a house someplace. And if you have kids at home, you want a quiet place where when you're on the phone, there's not a lot of stuff going on in the background to be distracting to you or distracting to the person you're talking to. These days, of course, a computer with internet and email capability is essential. Most people have that. If you don't have that, though, the library is a great resource for that. Local libraries have computers you can use. You can get an email account. If you're not computer savvy in today's workplace, you need to get there. And there are classes usually through libraries and other places where you can learn computer basics that are essential, really, if you're in the job search process and in the job. Another essential is really a phone with an answering machine or voicemail, because you don't want somebody calling you asking to get together for an interview and the phone rings and rings because you're out networking or on a different interview and lose that opportunity. So voicemail or something like that to take messages. And record keeping system. If you're doing a good job search process, we're going to talk later about networking, but in the job search process, you should be meeting people, finding people you can help, and people will make good connections, which means you're going to be talking to hundreds of people, and you need to keep records of who are the people that I've been given names for. You meet with someone, and they give you the names of five people you ought to talk to. You got to keep a record of who are those five people, where did I get that name from, how do I get a hold of them, when did I first call them, when did I second call them, when did I meet with them, what is the follow-up, and all those kinds of things. So you need to have a system of keeping that information, like a Excel spreadsheet or something. That is always an effective way to do it. And the same thing for job prospects. What was that job I applied for last week? Where did I find that? What was it all about? You have to keep track of all that stuff, because somebody's going to call you and say, hey, you know, you applied for this job, and you don't want to be saying, what was that job again? So keeping good records and knowing what your activity is and being able to refer back to all that stuff is important. Then the last thing I have on this list is family awareness and support. You want your family to be part of the process and to be aware of what the expectations are for them. For example, if you have teenagers at home, you don't want them answering the phone saying, hey, Mom or Dad, there's somebody on the phone who wants to talk to you. Get off the phone, because somebody's going to be calling me pretty soon. So everybody in the family needs to know that there's a job search going on, and they need to be as professional as you are, really. So. Then another thing about getting ready is the whole idea of being dressed for success. And the advice is always to dress at a level above what you would expect the workplace to be. You're never embarrassed. I can't imagine you would be anyways embarrassed by being dressed in a dark blue suit if everyone's in a polo shirt. But if you walked in a polo shirt and everyone turns out they're in a dark blue suit, you might be embarrassed. So, and there are still places that the dress code is dark blue suit and a white shirt. So. In terms of financial matters, there are a lot of things to think about. One is a lot of people, when they're in the job search process, they think, oh, I'm not going to take unemployment. That's welfare. I'm not going to stoop so low as to be on welfare. But it's really insurance, which the company that you used to work for paid for an insurance policy. And if you had insurance for health insurance and you went to the doctor, you wouldn't say, well, I'm not going to collect that insurance because that might be welfare. The same thing is true for unemployment compensation. It's an insurance program for people who are employed. When they become unemployed, they have payments to carry them through those times. So, and we have had people that have said that they weren't going to apply for it because that's welfare and they didn't want to be on a welfare program. So I just want to assure you that it is not welfare, it is insurance, and take advantage of that. Another important thing to remember is that job search expenses are tax deductible, and I'm not a tax advisor, and so therefore you should consult with your tax advisor on those things, but it is all tax deductible. Keep track of mileage, anything you spend for stamps and stationery and anything that is dedicated to the job search is a tax deductible expense. Itemize your deductions. Then the other thing, obviously, is if you're in the throes of unemployment and a job search, your income has probably been reduced, so you might need to reduce your budget and manage it much more carefully and find ways to save and stretch. We're going to talk, I know, more about resources later in the day, but just in terms of getting ready, just a few comments. There are tons of resources out there. Kim talks about resources for hours. just to hit and mention some of them, library, especially the Cuyahoga County Public Library and the Maple Heights branch. For those of you in this general area, the Maple Heights branch has a really good facility called InfoSource or something like that, InfoPlace. And it's dedicated really to the job search process and it has all kinds of information. And they actually have people there also who can be counselors and advisors on things like resumes and your process. That's the next thing on our list here, actually, is networking groups. There are tons of those out there through various organizations, different churches, and different public groups have organized networking groups for people in the job search process, and it's an opportunity to do much as we do here, learn what each other are looking for and find ways to help each other. Lots of internet resources, of course, the monster.com and the Career Board and Career Builder and so forth. Cuyahoga County Employment Services Center, which is over on, is it State Road? Anybody in here go to there? Well, there is one over on the west side, it is. And each county has one of those. At least each county around here, I know, has one of those. I think the important thing in all that is really don't feel like you're an island out there on your own. Get connected with other people, get connected with resources, find encouragers and people who can be accountability partners. and help you through the process. Now, in the job search, the product that you're selling basically is yourself. And so, if you were selling widgets, you'd want to know all about widgets, and you'd want to know, you know, who buys widgets, and what do widgets do, and what are the different kinds of widgets that are out there, and how can this be the best widget, and so forth. So the same thing is true for yourself. When you're in the job search process, you want to be understanding what your background is, your experience, your education, your skills, and your strengths, and your weaknesses, and you want to understand them so well that when you talk to a potential employer, you can give the pitch in a strong and positive way. So there's a lot of different processes for examining yourself, and one of the things, of course, is to ask people who know you, you know, what do you see in me that I have to be emphasizing to potential employers? What are my skills and capabilities and strengths? We actually will do, if you see the schedule in your handout, next week we'll do a career interest survey, the Holland self-directed search. And there are different tools like that out there. You can get some of those at the libraries and stuff that we're talking about to help you think through, am I in the right career? Should I be thinking about something different? Or if I'm in the right career, why am I in the right career? What are the strengths that I have? What are the interests that I have that really make me suited for this? Because you want to understand that so well that when you're in the interview process, you can say, you know, I can do this job because my interests are, my skills are, and so forth. A book I always recommend is Discovering Your Natural Talents by John Bradley and Jay Carty. It's much like What Color Is Your Parachute, but it's written from a Christian perspective. The basic premise is God gives us all talents, and it helps you dig through those things that are your interest and find what are your God-given talents, and then how do those relate to career choices. And it goes through the different areas, like what are your communication skills, what are your organizing skills, what are your personal skills, and so forth. And again, the idea is to know yourself well so that when you walk into an interview, you know the product and you can convince an employer that you're going to be the right product for their opportunity. Understanding what you're just thinking down the road, you know, where am I headed in my career? What do I want to be doing next year, 5 years from now, 10 years from now? Then, in terms of getting started, the thing we always recommend to people is a marketing plan. If you were selling widgets again, you know, where should I be selling these widgets? Who are the customers going to be, and so forth? The marketing plan really is a plan for yourself to organize your job search so you spend your time being productive, looking for the right things that suit you and suit your career plan. And it's also a great tool for communicating with your network contacts. A lot of times when I meet with somebody just to get to know them, they're in a job search process and they want to network, they might have either their marketing plan or a short version of it that says, you know, here's the kinds of things that I am and here's what I'm looking for. And it helps me to think about, well, who might I introduce this person to? How might I help them down this path that they're headed on? So a marketing plan should have a discussion of your objective, What are the kinds of things that you hope to be doing in the next step in your career? And a longer term plan? The next part of it would be a positioning statement. What is it you do? And really a description of who you are, what you do, and why you're headed where you're going. Part three of a marketing plan would be strengths and weaknesses. Strengths, obviously, that's what you're going to emphasize, but weaknesses so that you can do two things. One is figure out how you're going to overcome those weaknesses. What do I need to do to turn a weakness into a strength? And the second reason why you want to understand your weaknesses, you're going to always get asked those questions in an interview. So what's your greatest weakness? And you want to be ready with a quick response. And Marty's going to talk about how to address those later on when we talk about interviewing. Understanding your target market. Am I looking for jobs anywhere in the country, or am I looking for jobs in Mayfield Heights? And what kind of industry, what kind of companies or organizations? And when we talk about what kind of organizations are we interested in, the understanding the size, the culture, it's important for your success. You want to be in a culture that matches your personality. So if you're a hard driver, go, 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 then you can be comfortable in a company that is, you know, make it or break it. If you're not a hard driver, hit the road. If you're laid back, there's, you know, family and the group is more important than everything, anything else. There are companies that have that kind of culture too. So finding the one that matches you is helpful to be successful. And finding one and ending up in one that doesn't match you leads to frustration. So the list of target companies, I always find that helpful when I'm talking to somebody in a networking meeting, is, you know, what kind of companies are you interested in? Because then I can think about, well, who do I know at those companies? Or this person's listed these three companies, but I know two other companies that are just like them. Maybe they haven't thought about them yet. So helping me as a networking contact think through, you know, where might you fit in? So doing some research and understanding what the potential target market would be is a helpful thing. And then what are the channels you're going to use to carry out your job search? How are you going to contact these target companies? Are you looking for network contacts into them? Are you going to send them all letters and see whether you can generate interest on your own? Are you going to just follow their websites for job openings? How do you want to approach these companies, these opportunities that you've identified? And the various channels. How much time are you going to spend with want ads? How much time are you going to spend on monster.com? How much time are you going to spend networking? How much time are you going to spend in any other of the channels that you're going to use? So you prioritize where your efforts are and you can plan out your days. I'm going to spend 1 hour a day doing this, you know, looking on the internet, and I'm going to spend 6 hours a day doing my networking. I'm going to spend 1 hour a day doing correspondence. The various channels, probably most of you have heard the stats on the visible job market represents about 15%, maybe 15, 20% of the job opportunities, actual job opportunities that are out there. The visible job market being the things like job postings on the internet, jobs advertised in the newspapers and other classifieds. So only 15 or 20% of the jobs that are out there available, or people find jobs through those internet classifieds and so forth, the visible job market. The 80% or 85% of the jobs are found through things like networking, or people call the church all the time saying, I'm not going to look through hundreds of resumes that I get from an ad in the paper to find the person I need. I just want a good person. So therefore, I'm going to talk to several churches and find, you know, who are the people that are in the body that are looking for opportunities. I did a project not too long ago for the Ohio Board of Regents where I talked to a bunch of companies about training and finding employees. And some of the stories I heard, they would put a sign on the door, we do drug testing, don't apply if you can't pass a drug test. And still, three-fourths of the applicants would not pass the drug test. So, you know, those kinds of things, when you're doing the visible job search, visible market, finding good people out of that stack of applicants is a tough thing to do. But so there's a lot of stuff that goes on in the invisible job market where, you know, somebody says to all their friends, I'm looking for a person like, who do you know? And so that's why networking is so important, and finding lots of contacts out there in the world who know that you're looking for an opportunity, know about you, and can help you make those kinds of connections. The other part of the invisible job market is the jobs that are created just because somebody pops up. You happen to meet a hiring manager somewhere and you have a discussion about your background and they just say, you know what, I've been thinking about doing something like that and you're the perfect person. So therefore, we're going to create a job because you fit exactly what I'm looking for. So those kinds of things are the 80% of the opportunities, and so those are the ones you really need to be spending time looking for. And there's other ones on this list here that might be part of your channels to the market. Job fairs, for certain kinds of openings, job fairs might be a good source. Executive search firms for certain kinds of openings, and so forth. You won't be able to read this, of course, but it's a sample marketing plan. And as we talked about, an objective, career highlights, strengths, the kinds of positions looked for, and target company attributes. You know, what's the definition of the perfect opportunity? Is it a big company, a small company, and what kind of industry, what kind of geographic locations, and so forth? And then target companies. This one actually is, this person wants to be with a manufacturing company in southeastern Wisconsin. And turns out I know some of these companies down here, and I know a guy at that company right there. So then that would be helpful then for both thinking through the process yourself and for talking to somebody in your network. You know, Do you know anybody who can help me move down the road towards something, some opportunity in these kinds of target markets? Yeah, I think I like it when I have a networking meeting and somebody gives me this kind of detail, because one of the first questions I ask is, or not one of the first questions, but always the question I ask is, well, what are the companies you're interested in? What organizations? And I'm thinking about, who do I know that I can connect this person with? And so the more detail, the more defined that you have that, the better it helps me as a networker to make introductions and connections for you. Then, of course, the next thing is your marketing, and your marketing materials is the resume. And I borrowed this from somebody, the AAA resume. It has actions, achievements, and accomplishments in it. So it demonstrates the benefits. What are the benefits of this product, the product being you? So I like to go through this little exercise of when you're describing what you've done in the past, how do you want to describe that? And the words that you always want to have, action words and achievements. So if I had this in a resume, how effective do you think this would be? My job was salesman, therefore I was the salesman for a 3-state territory. What's wrong with that? Is that good or bad or?
What did you sell and how successful were you?
Right. I've heard Vance say no actions and no achievements. And so, yeah, it's this whole thing of, okay, that was your responsibility, but what did you actually do and how successful were you? So what if it said, well, I was responsible. Is responsible an action word? And it's a verb. No, it's not even a verb. Is it a verb? But if I said I grew sales, so now I have some action in there, and I actually have an achievement in there. I grew sales by 17% in my 3-state territory. So now I'm actually saying I can actually do the job. I don't just have responsibility to do the job, but I actually can do it. What if we change that to be increased sales by 17% in a highly competitive and historically underperforming 3-state territory? Now we start to say, okay, this person can actually do something and do something of benefit that might be of value to a potential employer. We could even carry that on further by saying increased sales by 17% in a highly competitive and historically underperforming 3-state territory by demonstrating value of premium product and winning 32 new customers. I might actually suggest that just the first three lines would be the good part to put on the resume, and this is what you talk about when you get in the interview, because they're going to say, oh, you actually grew sales by 17% in a tough territory, huh? So what did you do in order to accomplish that? You didn't want to have, the resume should be the prompter for a discussion of your capabilities and strengths. And Marty will talk about that in much more detail later on. The most common form of a resume, Charlotte could talk up about this all the time, but the most common form of a resume is the reverse chronological resume, and that's what people expect. When they're sorting through 100 resumes, they expect them to look like a reverse chronological. It starts with your most recent position and works back through time for a ways. And it has the elements of contact information at the top. The next element would be either a career objective or a qualification summary. And in that regard, I'm a big fan of qualification summaries, and I'm not a fan of career objectives, because to me, career objectives are always stuff like, I'm seeking a position as a product manager at an industrial company because you're applying for a product manager job at an industrial company. Well, If it said something different than that, I'd throw it out. So it has to say, I'm applying for the job that you're advertising. So I think it's pretty fairly useless in my mind. I like the qualification summary, which is a nice bullet point. You know, here's the things that I offer. Catch somebody's attention, position it right away, and here's why this person might be the right person for our opportunity. And then, professional experience. What's the title, the dates employed, employer names, so they actually understand who these people are, who these companies were that you worked for, a sentence of responsibility, then 3 to 5 achievements and accomplishments. And that achievements and accomplishments that we just talked about, action words. Even if you were a car porter for an automotive dealer, the car porter is the guy who drives people to their job with their car. And so, okay, might seem like a mundane job, but an achievement would be, I drove 1,000 customers with an unblemished safety record. I built rapport with customers to help the company have return business. So those kinds of achievements. You can develop achievements out of any job opportunity that you've had in the past. Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I think the better your achievements are, the easier it is to stand above the crowd. And your point of having real evidence that those are real achievements, I've been through resumes before where I knew that those achievements were phony baloney. And so knowing that they're real is a good thing. Education, training, and certifications, another part of the resume then. So again, you won't be able to read this, but here's the, and I would never get too fancy with formats and colors and fonts and all that stuff. To me, it needs to be focused on what's the information, not how fancy is it. But this is not too bad. Here's a little profile and an experience, the dates, the company, the position, the responsibilities, the achievements. And obviously, 2 pages at the maximum. 1 page is good too. Never more than 2 pages. If you can't say it in 2, then you're just using too many words. Yeah. Well, it does several things. Yeah, for those of you who didn't hear that question about how much experience do you put on a resume like that, and typically it's 10 to 15 years, it's the last 2 or 3 positions. Because before that, it's so long in the past, it's probably not that relevant anymore. And the second reason is obviously for age discrimination. You don't want to say, well, I started my first job in 1963. Okay, well, I can figure out how old you are then. So, for both reasons, 10 to 15 years. That's a good question. And I think it depends on what do you have to show for those 10 to 15 years. I actually, on my resume, when I use it for certain things, I go back, way back, because my experience from 30 years ago. That's where my engineering experience is, and all of my experience in the last 25 or 30 years has been my really strategy, business planning stuff. And I like to tell people I've got some good engineering background, and so I have my own mind the whole thing. Not the whole thing, but relevant stuff. I think it's a judgment thing, myself. Were there other questions? This is the second page of that same resume, and you see down here, this actually, I think this person is an IT person, so they have some technical summary, things like certifications. What are the, if you're in IT, what languages do you know? If you're in the medical field, or there's some other fields where certifications and particular qualifications are important. You'll notice on here there are no categories personal interest. Maybe they do that for college graduates or something, personal interest. But in my mind, there are very limited opportunities for putting personal interest. If you're applying to Petites, you're an accountant applying to Petites Garden Center, and one of your hobbies happens to be gardening, personal interest might be interesting there. If you're a guitar player and you're applying to Gibson, they only hire guitar players for whatever position they fill. They have to be guitar players, basically. So maybe you want to put that you play it in a rock band. But if you're applying to Eaton Corporation, they probably don't want to know that you're in a rock band. They probably would rather not know that, because not making any personal statements, but just saying maybe you're Monday morning, you might not be at your greatest if you played all weekend in the rock band. So then the other type of resume, for special situations, there's the resume called the functional resume. And the special situations would be if you're changing career paths. You were a teacher and now you want to go into sales. You were a homemaker while your kids were growing up and now you're going back in the workforce. Those kinds of things. If you're making some drastic changes, or if it's hard to make sense out of your background because you were in manufacturing, then you went to finance, then you went to this, then you went to that, and it's like, what are you, and so forth. So a functional resume can kind of solve some of those problems and sell you better in certain situations than a reverse chronological might. And a functional would have a contact information, career objective again, but instead of having the list of positions you had and the accomplishments that you achieved there, you would start off with reorganizing those accomplishments into an area called competencies. So you would talk through your competencies, and then later on you might just have a summary of what positions you've held, what your experience is in the past. And here's a example of a functional resume. Same kind of stuff at the top. A summary of qualifications. And then the skills here. In this particular example, this person has broken them down into marketing, market planning, and product planning. So whatever they did in the past, or even if they were, those even could be your experience in a volunteer organization or all kinds of things that you might say, okay, these are my accomplishments and I'm going to organize them in these categories so that people can see in my marketing role, I've done these kinds of things that really are the same as what I would be doing in a marketing role. In my market planning role, I've done these things in the past that would be translatable into market planning kind of thing. And then a quick summary of some experience and education. These days we're doing more and more stuff electronically, but the cover letter still has the same purpose, which it's really transmitting a resume. It needs to be short and sweet. It needs to set up the resume. So the format I always like is a format that says, you know, here's what I know the company needs, so here's how my background fits exactly with what the company needs. And it doesn't need to be a three-page letter of, you know, here's all the things I've done in the past. It's not a repeat of the resume, it's just a transmittal of the resume. Then there's a thing, are you going to talk about marketing letters later? Or Probably, okay. So we'll just touch this quickly. There are certain opportunities where if you're doing direct mail and so forth, you might want to use just a marketing letter, which is highlighting the capabilities and experience in a letter form rather than a resume form for doing targeted direct marketing campaign. These days, there's spell check, and if you're not the best at grammar and all that kind of stuff, find some friend who is, but don't do these kinds of problems. I demand a salary commiserate instead of commensurate with my extensive experience. I have learned WordPerfect computer and spreadsheet, but obviously I haven't learned how to do the press the spell check button. I received a plague for Salesperson of the Year. Well, maybe they didn't like him so much, they gave him the plague. Wholly responsible for two failed financial institutions. I'm not sure which part of the institution they were responsible for, but maybe the failing. I'm a perfectionist and rarely, if ever, forget details. I was working for my mom until she decided to move. She might not be your best reference. I have an excellent track record, although I'm not a horse. I am loyal to my employer at all costs. Please feel free to respond to my resume on my office voicemail. Personal interests, donating blood, 14 gallons of it. Here's my great example of personal interest. Does anybody really care? It's nice that you did that, but that's not going to be a qualification for the job. Instrumental in ruining, I don't think that was the right word, but entire operation for Midwest Chain Store. Please don't misconstrue my 14 jobs as job hopping. I have never quit a job. I've been fired 14 times, but no. Reason for leaving last job, they insisted that all employees get to work by 8:45 every morning. I couldn't work under those conditions. Unfortunately, the study I told you about I did for the Ohio Board of Regents, that's another problem with today's workforce, is they hire people who don't want to show up at 8 o'clock in the morning or decide they want to go to Cedar Point the next day, and so go ahead and fire me. I don't care. The company made me a scapegoat just like my three previous employers. That's an attitude problem, I think, there. Since the world is really becoming internet, email-based, it's important to have an email address that's your professional email address, not Huggy Bear at... We actually had somebody in our group that was, I think it was Huggy Bear or something like that. So it needs to be a professional kind of an email address. And you should be aware of things like Facebook and so forth. People can find you on the internet. And so Google yourself and make sure that what shows up, hopefully that's what shows up is not bad with this group, but just be sure that's true. That your Facebook doesn't have a bunch of rants about your previous employer or something like that. So, questions about the getting ready stuff? I think you should. I think a cover letter, like I said, short and sweet, but I think it gives you the opportunity to sort of set up your resume. You know, here's the things that I see that you need. You're going to find these on my resume. Yes, Marty's going to go further into some of this stuff as we go through here, and the evening workshops go into more detail on various categories. Yeah. Okay, well, if there aren't any other questions, we're scheduled for a 15-minute break or something like that, I think, and back at 10:15.